One of the most popular novelists around college campuses in the 70s was Tom Robbins. His 1976 novel, Even Cowgirls Get the Blues, is now in its 19th printing. It's just been republished by Bantam, along with his other novels, Another Roadside Attraction, Jitterbug Perfume, and Still Life with Woodpecker. Robbins also has a new novel, Skinny Legs and All. Jay Cantor, reviewing the book for The Washington Post, wrote, "I don't read Robbins for his friendly preaching or even the story or the characters, but for the fizz, the style, and the attitude. Robbins' world is filled with the ecstasy of happy hyperbole, metaphor at any cost, and charming fancies." I asked Tom Robbins to read from the opening of Skinny Legs and All.
It was a bright, defrosted pussy willow day at the onset of spring, and the newlyweds were driving cross-country in a large roast turkey. The turkey lay up on its back, as roast turkeys will, submissive, agreeable, volunteering its breast to the carving blade, its roly-poly legs cocked in a stiff but jaunty position, as if it might summon the gumption to spring forward onto its feet. But, of course, it had no feet, which made the suggestion seem both empty and ridiculous, and only added to the turkey's aura of goofy vulnerability. Despite its featlessness, however, its pathetic, podalic privation, this roast turkey, or jumbo facsimile thereof, was moving down the highway at 65 miles an hour, traveling faster, farther on its back than many aspiring actresses.
Now, how would you describe your use of imagery?
Pop Baroque.
Meaning?
It comes out of the imagination, you know. It comes out of observation, marinated in imagination.
Now, you started off as a journalist, and I assume you had to do pretty straightforward, factual reporting when you started. How did you get off into such non-literal imagery?
Well, they never really let me do much reporting in journalism. They primarily assigned me to writing headlines.
Oh, really? What kind of headlines would you write?
Well, I wrote headlines on Dear Abby. And when she came to Seattle, she came to the newspaper, as she often does when she goes to a new city, and she asked to meet the person who was writing the headlines on her columns because they were so different from what she was getting in Des Moines and Cleveland.
Can you give an example? Do you remember any of them?
All I remember one was about some flap that was occurring in California. They were going to remove the Tarzan books from the public schools because Tarzan and Jane weren't married. And the headline said, "Did Tarzan live too high in tree?" That sort of thing.
Well, I'm trying to see if I get it. No, seriously.
Well, he was living in sin, you know, and in the top of that mango tree. And did Tarzan live too high in tree? I don't know. You'd have to have been there.
So you really weren't doing much actual journalism, just headline writing?
Well, later on, I became an art critic. So I did write for the paper in that capacity. But art criticism gives you a lot of room to be nonlinear,
mm-hmm.
and to play with the texture and the color of the language.
So what got you from headline writing to fiction?
Oh, I hesitate to say it in this day and time, but it was probably related at least somewhat to my ingestion of 300 micrograms of pure Sandoz lysergic acid diethylamide 25.
So you took some LSD, some of the pure stuff, and that somehow led you to fiction?
No, I'd been writing fiction since I was 5 years old. On my fifth birthday, I received a Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs scrapbook. And instead of pasting pictures in it, I wrote stories. And, of course, at five, I couldn't actually write, so I dictated them to my mother. And she, whenever the muse would strike, she would have to stop her ironing or cooking or whatever she was doing and take dictation. And occasionally, she would change a word here and there to make it, in her opinion, sound better. And when she read the story back to me, I always knew every word that had been changed, and I would throw a tantrum until she put it back the way I had it.
Oh, gee, editors must have had a ball working with you if this is how you were when you were 5 years old.
I told that story to my editor a few years ago, and he said, "My God, Robbins, you haven't changed in 40 years.
And I think your early books were read especially by people in the counterculture, so to speak. did you ever feel like part of this group? I know you've often been described as reclusive. I don't really know for a fact how off on your own you've been over the years.
Well, I'm a friendly recluse, and of course it's always more fun to look at somebody else's navel than your own. So I haven't been all that reclusive, but and I did very much feel a part of the so-called psychedelic community. But still, you had to go in the room and lock the door and do your own work.
Mm-hmm. So getting back to the type of imagery that you use in your writing, would you make a direct connection between that kind of almost surrealistic hyper imagery and the experience of taking LSD?
No, I don't think there's any real connection. That type of that approach to language has been around in one form or another for a long time by people who probably never had anything stronger than vodka. What psychedelics did for me in a literary sense, if anything, was I think it made it easier for me to move from one level of so-called reality to another, to be less restrictive in what I consider the real world.
In your new novel, An Arab and a Jew Open a Restaurant in New York, and this is almost some kind of strategy to show that conflicts between Arabs and Jews or Arabs and Israelis can be eased. Why did you want to tackle the Middle East in some metaphoric way?
Because the Middle East is the landscape in which our ultimate fantasies unfold. Christians, Arabs, and Jews all look to the Middle East for some kind of eschatological fulfillment. You know, the apocalypse, Armageddon, the redemption, the second coming. Only the last two scenes in the book actually take place in the Middle East. So what I was really dealing with was the Middle East in the American psyche, the Jerusalem in the American consciousness. But the book contrasts, I guess, the rituals of our mythological heritage, which is a mythology that was dense and deep, and a mythology that explained life and death and illuminated the psyche. It contrasts that with the rituals of contemporary mythology, which is a mythology that's shallow and superficial, standardized, probably thoroughly corrupted by commercialism, and that has very few lessons to teach anybody. And this contrast is epitomized in the book by the pitting of the real magic of the Dance of the Seven Veils against the contrived ersatz magic of the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm. We were talking about how many of your early readers, like you, were into the counterculture, into taking LSD. Do you feel that that dated you in any way, in the sense that when that period ended, that people maybe didn't feel that they would connect to you as much?
Well,
I guess I'm wondering if you think that's a danger of being timely or of your time.
Yeah, but all writers, all good writers are of their time. Shakespeare was of his time. The problem is with reviewers who like to pigeonhole you, they tend to stick you in a particular time, and nothing makes my Rh negative blood turn into boiling buttermilk quite so much as being called a 60s writer. I'm no more a 60s writer than Hemingway was a 30s writer. My first novel was set in the 60s. Rolling Stone called it the quintessential novel of the 60s. But since then, I've had very little to do with the 60s. Certainly, my last two books, have no connection whatsoever to the 60s.
Could I ask you a financial question? You've had.
I can loan
yeah,
you,
can you loan
maybe
me some money?
$20, but I don't get paid until May 1st.
Are you able to live off of royalties from your books and savings from your books that were bestsellers, or do you have to, while you're writing, also sell pieces to magazines or do other jobs on the side?
No, I live quite well from the proceeds of the sales of my books.
Mm-hmm.
Better than I ever expected to live. Although I really don't live that much differently than I ever did. I suppose it gives me more mobility. But having money in the bank does give me a great Buddhistic calm.
Well, Tom Robbins, I thank you very much for talking with us.
Terry, it was a consummate pleasure.
Tom Robbins' new novel is Skinny Legs and All. It's published by Bantam.